Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
And welcome, everybody. This is episode 180 of the Rugby Rant. I'm Scott, the big guy Ferrara. It's Rob the Hammer Hammers. What are you looking weird for, dude?
You at 180?
Yeah.
Dude, I know you're an accounting guy, but I think you miscounted.
Dude, what do you mean? We're at 180.
And 180.
Yeah, I thought we're at 180. Now he's making me go into the feed. Yeah. This is why you shouldn't have partners.
I think it's 173.
What? I thought we were at 180 already.
I don't think so.
Okay, 173 according to Rob, I guess. we'll just go with that. 173. Anyway, that's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt always interrupting. Trying to pump up our numbers, Rob. Look so we can look better on charts. Got it. And today we have Houston Sabercat superfan, Christina Lanham. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, hey, I got to give you your props, Christina. I mean, you know, we put the word out there. Hey, we're looking for fans to join in. And people do a lot of talking, but they don't put their hand up to jump in on the show. And you put your hand up, and that's why we love you.
Well, thanks. I love you guys.
Appreciate it. We're always looking for people to join and talk rugby with us and have a blast here. And, you know, it's people get sick of seeing, you know, Mikey and Rick Collins and B and, you know, the same old characters. So we're glad to have some new blood on.
That's right.
Although, you know, TJ always gives us some good content. I know we had TJ and Wendy on last episode, yep. Which was apparently episode 172, according to Rob. But, you know, it's one of those fun things to have new people on. So we really appreciate it. But right now we're going to get into our Around the Pitch. All right, Hammer, start us off, buddy.
Yeah, I'm going to start off this one with I've got a beef, and I'm going to tell you why I've got a beef as it relates to Around the Pitch. I've got a beef. You know, we just had a ton of club rugby on the men's and women's side happen this weekend, a lot of regionals and super regional finals, and in all in preparation for May 17th through 19th and the national club rugby finals. And we don't have a central place where all the scores were listed in a nice tight package. Kudos to Wendy Young for doing it on the women's side of things, but you know, it was really pretty hard to find. So I'm going to talk about club rugby as I saw it in the Midwest Super Regional. So I'll start first with the St. Louis Bombers. Kudos to St. Louis Bombers, near and dear to my heart. Preston Hammerschmidt playing on the wing for them, scored two tries. Congrats to MJ Spangenberg for his man of the match honors. The boys played well against a Park City Haggis team. Jason, big shout out to you guys for coming to the Midwest. We know it was a haul for you, but it was good seeing you, my brother. Good luck doing what you're doing. St. Louis Bombers will be representing D1 down there They will play the Dallas Reds, I believe, on the 17th. Then D2, congrats to, on the men's side, the Indianapolis Impalas. Without a Will Maggie, by the way, still were able to capture the title this weekend. Will be going down to Austin. They booked their ticket. And on the women's side, South Buffalo, congrats to you ladies. Way to go. And then the D3 men's, the Red River Ruffians, have qualified for Natties, and they will be down there in Austin at Round Rock the 17th to the 19th. Should be a lot of fun to watch those on the Rugby Network. Check it out.
Sweet. Listen, we love the update, and shout out to our friend Wendy Young, who literally, I mean, the effort, the work she puts in to get those out there is crazy. And I'm sure if me and you had half the drive to do what she does, we could probably do the men's, but we don't because we're late. Christina, let's go with your first topic.
Sure thing. So I wanted to give a shout out to SaberCats 2, which is the senior academy team for the Houston SaberCats. And this year in 2024, they've already signed three players from SaberCats 2 into the MLR. So Aiden Kerr, Brian Flamenco, and obviously most notably Seth Smith, who's having a heck of a first season. But love seeing the pathway at work, seeing new American talent getting into the MLR, and most importantly, helping develop those players for 2031 for that Rugby World Cup.
Awesome. I'm just trying to mute Rob as he's coughing during our around the pitch segment.
I thought I turned.
Not professional.
My apology.
Completely wrong.
I thought I turned.
Way to just try and shake her, get her off her game. Rah. Can't believe you. Anyway, I'm going to hit my first topic. My first topic is the USA Wheelchair Rugby announced their player pool for the 2024 Paralympics. Included in that player pool is Sarah Adam of Naperville, Illinois. We've talked about Sarah before as she was looking to become the first woman named to the U.S. Paralympic wheelchair rugby team, and she has. She's an assistant professor of occupational therapy at St. Louis U, and she began playing wheelchair rugby in 2019 and made her international debut in 2022 at the America's Championship, where we won gold and then winning silver at the World Championships in 2022. She was also part of the Parapan American Games gold-winning team. And that's where they secured their spot for Paris, and she was officially named as the first woman to be part of the team. So congratulations, Sarah. I'm going to try and reach out. Maybe we can get her on an RPK sooner or later.
Oh, let's get her on. I mean, she's from my neck of the woods right here in the Midwest. I mean, St. Louis University and, you know, hails from Naperville, Illinois, just a stone's throw from where I live here in the suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, so, back to my buddy Mark Masciotti, who's the head chef over there for the St. Louis U Athletics program.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. But Rob, number two, buddy.
Well, hopefully I won't go number two here. It'll just be, you know, the second.
You're such a fucking dad.
Well, that's what happens when you have boys. You should know that. You know, you're going to be doing Pull My Finger with Chef not too long from now. All right. So interesting. I talked about club rugby with my number one around the pitch. And the reason why this is number two is some folks kind of stepped to number two, if you will, because in the Pacific men's D1 semifinal, there was a bit of controversy. OMBAC was playing Seattle. And follow this. At full time, the recorded score, Seattle had scored a try right at the end there and took the match to overtime. During overtime, Seattle scored a try to win, but upon review of the match by a third-party panel, they indicated that a penalty that was recorded, somebody recorded that as a try, and OMBAC protested during the game, but it didn't get picked up till later, and so essentially they ruled that because Seattle got a try, it was in the first, the try was recorded somewhere in the first half, that their try there at the end did not put it into a tiebreaker situation, which overtime was necessary to play. OMBAC was actually declared the winner. So essentially just after the game that Seattle who had won it, that result was reversed. If you can follow. A lot of controversy in D1, and it really begs the question of with, you know, officials, with ARs, and with folks on the sideline at the table, and, you know, coaches standing on either side keeping score. why all those heads couldn't have come up with this fix before the game was over.
I'm gonna say two things. One, wasn't there controversy last year in the D1 playoffs because of player eligibility?
Yeah, it was player eligibility.
Yeah,
there's player eligibility involved in the Chicago Griffins. Interestingly, you know, like I said, Preston was here in town to play in the men's D1 final. His roommate and very close friend, Reese Smith, kind of a similar situation. Had played in the ARP with the Mystic River, and so he hadn't played with the Bombers this fall, and therefore he didn't have the requisite number of qualifying matches to be considered a Bomber. In spite of the fact he'd played sevens this summer with the Bombers and had done some other stuff with them, you know, come from college out of, you know, Lindenwood. So they're actually filing appeal, but wisely, unlike the Griffins, they didn't let him play. And the appeal is
waiting for the appeal,
submitted till Tuesday so that they don't vacate any chance to, you know, continue in the playoff process.
Exactly. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to have to take a look at eventually guys who are playing on teams like Mystic River and Lou, you know, all those feeder teams that are going to MLR. Cause if a guy has a chance to go and play with an MLR professional team, and maybe they don't have the setup of Houston, like an HTX, you would go to play for that club team. So I wonder if they're going to start having a waiver system, because now this is becoming more prevalent. Secondly, how do you get that stat wrong, man? I mean, look at there's baseball fans that bring their stat book, and the stats get corrected like that. I mean, you know, it's crazy. Think about how many, I mean, when I go to Mets games, it's everybody, all the old timers like Rob, have their little books with pads, and they're teaching their kids, this is how you score a single, this is how you score a double. Dude, I'm always taking shots at you.
I know you are. I'm hurt.
But seriously, I think it's a little crazy that a penalty gets recorded as a try and nobody picks that up at all. Kind of crazy. Yeah, kind of weird. And, you know, you're talking to a guy who's scored football games and basketball games for youth. When I understand it's hard, but like, come on, this is D1 rugby. This isn't new to anybody. So, Christina, what's your second topic here?
So I wanted to give a shout out. Over the past weekend, we had the Texas Rugby State Championship. And for D2 high school boys club rugby, the Katy Barbarians were undefeated for the season. And so they took home the state championship. They actually were the curtain raiser game a couple of weeks ago at Sabercat Stadium and just completely dominated in the semi-state final. So kudos to Katy Barbarians, and way to have a winning season.
Awesome. Always love the update on local rugby.
I love that. And
local rugby and, you know, on the youth side and high school and everything. It's great. Real quick, my second one's going to be an easy one for people that missed it. Congratulations to Alev Kelter. She scored her 1,000th point as an Eagle. You know, it's let's be honest. You think Alev Kelter, you think of all the tries she scored and the amount of time she's run people over, and she's actually pretty good at kicking the ball as well. I believe she's the only fifth woman to notch 1,000 career sevens points. You know, amazing achievement, 1 of 5. Love her as an Eagle. We love her in the PR7s. Just a great achievement overall, and really appreciate the effort she puts out day in, day out. So congratulations a lot.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's cool to see, you know, obviously when you see Perry Baker, every time he scores the next try, he's always breaking his own record. But it's good to see other people be breaking records, especially in points. You don't think, you know, when you think of Lev Kelter, you see her on the 15 side, right? And you think, okay, yeah, she's obviously a center. But a little tougher to score points, but you know, she can move on the sevens pitch with a little bit of open field, and she can run some people over, and obviously she can kick some points too, because not all of her points have been through tries, unlike Dylan Fawcett. shout out to the Butcher. I just like to make fun of him a little bit. Still the leading try scorer in MLR history. Gotta love it. Yep. Anyway, so what we're doing today is, you know, last week was the halfway point. So we're a little bit past the halfway point in the MLR season, and we're gonna be ranking our teams, you know, who we feel are the best, who we feel the worst, you know, having fun with all of that. And I think we're gonna have a good discussion here. I think, you know, Christina has been doing like all this friggin' prep work, and I'm a little intimidated because I don't think I've done prep work since like show number 3, which apparently was 170 episodes ago. So I'm a little scared. I don't know about you, Rob. Rob does more prep work than me. I kind of just work off the top of the head here, but you know, I think we're gonna have an excellent topic here. But before we get into the topic and the rant, let's get a word from our sponsors.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off the field.
And Rob's going to try and tag me here, so I'm just going to keep muting his mic and eventually take him off the screen. Because Rob set up all of our little videos here, and he put the rant intro right next to the RPK intro. And, of course, I clicked the wrong one.
They can't be moved at all very easily just by clicking on it and, like, sliding it up or down.
How would I move it? They're in the order of how we do the show.
Okay, I failed to understand the problem then. Maybe because we should call down to Houston and ask how to fix the problem like they did in Apollo 13.
You should mark them differently, Rob, or you should delete it when we do it in a rant. Anyway, so I'm going to chalk that up to Rob being lazy. Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
First of all, before we get into the topic, this is the first time I've noticed it. We've had this Rugby Now, Rugby MLR Shop advert probably for, 3 years now? We've been using the same advert, and Ty has this great voiceover with his professional speaking voice. You ever notice the ball they're using in that friggin' advert?
The generic black, white with black stripe ball?
It's not even, doesn't have black stripes. It's all white and it has no texture to it. It's like it's vinyl. Yeah. I understand the old rugby ball, leather rugby balls were smooth.
Yeah.
This is now 2024.
Right. Nobody would use that thing.
Yeah. It's so weird. And especially they
it's made for a museum.
You would knock it on. Yeah, you would knock that on like crazy. Anyway, so what we're going to do is we're going to be ranking the teams. Like we said, we're more than halfway through the season. We're going to be ranking the teams. And here's the thing. We're not going to use a standard of ranking. We're all going to use our own standard to rank the teams. So each of us is going to rank all 12 teams according to whatever standard we hold. And then we're going to debate and poke a little holes in it. And as usual, we're going to give our guest first hit at this topic. So, Christina, let's get going here.
Sure thing. So, like Scott said, I data analyst partially by trade. So I threw a lot of data together to look at some things. And so going from 12 to 1, so worst to best, I have RFCLA, Anthem, Old Glory, Sharks, Legion, NOLA, Warriors, Jackals, Seawolves, Hounds, Free Jacks, and Sabercats. And I didn't put them first because I'm a Houston fan. They actually came out by the numbers.
Oh, there's a lot to poke holes in.
Yes, there is. And I'm happy to get into why I picked what I picked.
Yeah, I'll refrain until we go around the horn.
Well, the data analyst piece, at least we know you're better prepared than Scott.
Listen, I bet you, you know what? I'm going to refrain, Rob. That was just me.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings? I'm so sorry.
You're a mean person. Terrible human being.
Yeah, terribly.
Give us your goddamn rankings.
All right. I'm going to start at the bottom, just like Christina did, and go straight to the top, to number one. At 12, I'm going to go with the Anthem. At 11, I'm going to go with LA, RFCLA. At 10, I'm going to go with Miami. At 9, Old Glory DC. At 8, I'm going to go with NOLA, although they have a game in hand, so that makes it a little interesting. Then I'm going to go at 7, I'm going to go Utah. 6, Dallas. 5, San Diego. 4, New England. 3, Chicago. 2, Seattle. And number 1, Houston. I will agree with Christina on that one.
Gotcha. I like the way you did it. And again, lots to poke there. Yeah, you know it's coming, dude. Come on. So I've ranked the teams a little bit differently. I ranked them into three categories, four teams in each category. We're going to start off with who I call the contenders right now. And we're going Houston Sabercats, Seattle Seawolves, New England Free Jacks, and San Diego Legion. That's really no in particular order, but that's who I'm giving the contenders to right now. The next level, I'm going to just call them meh. They're going to be called meh. Starting off with the Hounds, then Dallas Jackals, then NOLA Gold, then Anthem. And then we're going to go with the UFA because, man, these teams are not doing well. Utah Warriors, Miami Sharks, LA, and Old Glory DC. So, I mean, I put them in tiers. Not necessarily ranked in a particular order in those tiers, but my tiers are contenders. Then the middle ground is the meh, and the teams that aren't doing well is the UFA. So, what do we want to talk about?
I got a beef. How is it that you can put the Anthem in the meh? I mean, I realize meh is not great. That I get.
So here's the thing. What were you expecting from Anthem? This is what everybody expected. Everybody expected Anthem not to win a game. And what have they done? Not win a game. They've had some close games. They're starting to look better. They're showing signs of life. But let's be honest, by the time they got the team together, by the time they started practicing, by the time they're you know, everybody's starting to gel, it's going to be the end of the season. Now, they're doing exactly what we thought they were going to do, right? This is exactly what we thought they were in. So they're right on par with meh.
Okay, so yet you're going to put a team that's second in the East, Chicago, in the same category as meh, an 0-8 meh?
6-3. They put a string of games together, but guess what? Chicago can see a string of games they lose. In the next few weeks. So my point being is
tough schedule. The second half schedules in the league.
I believe they have the second toughest schedule. I think if the research I was doing. So my point being is they would be on the border.
Oh,
you know I prepare the way I prepare. But to me, they're on the borderline of that contender spot. I wouldn't make them a contender yet. Yes, they had a big game out in Massachusetts. But the dominant winner, what was it, 5-3? I forgot about the draw.
Yeah.
The draw really hurts them. But, for the wins that Free Jacks did have, most of them were dominant. Again, San Diego dominant wins, Seattle dominant wins, Houston dominant wins. And we know the Free Jacks can finish despite their injuries. But I would if I had to rank all those teams in that middle meh area, Chicago Hounds would be number one. And again, they're bordering on contender. Any other questions?
Oh yeah, oh, I have questions, but I don't want to consume the whole show. I'm gonna by all means allow Christina, the data analyst, to poke some holes in your very, very thin veiled ranking of 12 teams.
So I think Jackals are, I wouldn't disagree, they're in the meh area. I would definitely say they are on a very strong trajectory this year, and clearly not the Jackals of years previous. But what do you think their hopes are getting out of meh and into contender this year?
I don't know if they're going to do that, but here's the thing. They had a lot of what I would consider, strong losses. They had very close losses. Do I think that they have the shot in this particular year to get around San Diego, Seattle, and Houston? No, I don't. Do I think they could maybe get some pot shots in at the end of the season as some of the teams are looking maybe to rest their guys? Yes. I do think that Dallas is really just a couple good forwards away of getting a really good pack. And I think once they can get a really good pack, you'll see them start to roll. You know, this is what, their third year, right? And you're starting to see from the, you could tell from the first 2 years, shit slides downhill and the top of their organization was messy for 2 years. This year, they actually have a strong organization. They have players who have now been here for 2 years, I think one or two for the full three. So they're starting to finally build that culture that they didn't have the first 2 years, in my opinion. Sorry, Rick, I don't know if you disagree with me. But I don't think they're going to get out of that middle pack, but I do feel like those five losses they have, I mean, if you look at their point differential is like 35 points. And if you take away one or two of the blowouts, that differential goes down to something like 7 points. So, you know, I think they're a strong team in a really strong conference. And I think maybe if you put them in the East, they'd probably, you know, be above NOLA, nipping at the hound's heels there.
Well, and Christina, I think it's interesting that you brought up Dallas. They're a team that, like, I agree with Scott. I like what they've done this year, their development, and I think they're a team to be contended with, and they just need to add a few pieces. So I very much agree with Scott in that regard. You can always add forwards. Forwards are going to improve, especially when you're playing Houston, you know, twice a season. You know you're going to get a tough match in the forward play. I'm more concerned about some of their backs. And here's why. I'm not, and I've forgotten his name, and I sincerely apologize. Their scrum half, as I watched and analyzed the game from this last weekend, I really think their starting scrum half was the hiccup in their game. Like, there was a lot of times he almost had a hitch or giddy up in his bring the ball out, where he would fake a dummy when the gap wasn't even there, and then he would get caught up a little bit in play to try to get the ball out, and it was slowing down play, not because of the opposition was slowing it down, but because he was, you know, making some interesting decisions at the base of the ruck. And it was more than one or two times he was doing that. Another time he went to look out one way and he tried to
Imhoff, right?
Yeah. And then he, you know, there was nothing there. And then he spun around and threw the ball out the other way. And it's like, man, you go to that ruck, you need to know where you're going to go with that ball.
Well, yeah, but with the indecision. Here's what I'll say. I think, you know, maybe the guy just had the yips, you know, and that unfortunately that happens. Well, it's like a shortstop in baseball. Maybe this was his time to have it.
And I think you happen
to be watching it when he's doing it.
The problem, I watched the whole game, and I think the part of the problem is that he's got that South American style and flair where you want to be, you know, creative and you want to have that, you know, variety and flair and not, you know, play to that game plan per se. But I think. You know, that can exist within a game plan. And I think he was too much of that ad lib style is in his game. That being said, their fullback, whose name escapes me, I'll probably come up with it here in a minute. Anyway, their fullback this weekend
Vaughn Isaacs.
Yeah, Vaughn Isaacs. He is one hell of a player. I just had some barnstorming runs, great with the boot. I really think is a true attacking option. I really liked what I saw out of him this weekend. And of course, you know, Gomez Vara, he probably put in one of the best forward games I've seen from any forward this season, particularly out of the back row.
Yeah. I mean, I think again, I didn't want to put pressure on the front three, but I think they need to get a little better in the front three, in my opinion. I think they need some better reserve props, in my opinion, I think, to finish out games. And I think that'll get them over the hump, because we've seen them have a strong first half, and then unfortunately when the subs come in, it kind of is a downgrade. And again, I'm not trying to talk shit about guys, I'm just stating the facts. You can see it in the performance week to week. But I mean, I think the biggest, can't talk right now, guys. It's late. I got a fucking 10-month-old. The biggest surprise to me is Los Angeles. Los Angeles had a team that should have been really cohesive, in my opinion, Robin, Christina. I don't know if that's how you think about it, but I mean, you have a lot of guys who play together, especially in that back line. You know, Dan Hollinshead coming back in the MLR playing, you know, for Rooney. Jason Emery, Rooney guy, Andrew Culler, Rooney guy, you know, it's, and unfortunately Jason Emery, you know, it gets nicked up a lot, but I just feel like they're a surprise to only be 1-6.
Except I think you're bringing in, you know, a lot of guys from Atlanta, and you have this, they're both the New York guys, as well as the Atlanta guys, are moving out to LA, new setup. They don't have that system, you know, down where they have an academy and they have some guys playing in that system. I think there was a lot of upheaval as a result of the move. And, you know, so therefore, you know, when guys are uncomfortable in their own personal lives, it can make life on the pitch a challenge to adapt and adjust to.
I would agree. I'm sorry, Christina, go ahead.
It's okay. I was going to say, and also, I mean, I went out to the Houston LA game. And so we ended up playing on a much smaller field than the field that, you know, at Dignity Park where they're playing now. And so they've switched pitches a couple of times at home. I don't think that lends itself to helping anything out. And, you know, we didn't even hear anything about LA to like right up before the season started. So I don't know how well organized they really had everything. I feel like they were as coming together as quickly as Anthem came together, it seemed like.
Well, we could, you know, Rob and I know from behind the scenes that necessarily wasn't the case, even though that might have been publicly what it looked like. But
well, you know, so Scott, you know, knocks on me for getting the tech, you know, screwed up.
My friggin' power went out. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Whatever.
Let me move us back.
Oh, so now weird. I got to edit this out. Ah, okay.
What do you mean edit it out? We don't need to edit this. But back to what I was going to say, the addition of Brooklyn Hardiger and also Wilton Robolo again. Will Leonard, another New York guy. So while I understand what you're saying, the style that LA plays is very similar to Atlanta and similar to New York. I mean, almost identical, to be quite honest. So, I mean, it should be an easy gel for them to at least be a little bit more cohesive. The point differential is like friggin' huge. Minus 91, you know, like that's a big deal. I mean, minus 91 for that many guys. Again, Anthem, minus 240, but how many of those guys are new to professional rugby? Right. Don't get me wrong, Connor McManus. Go for it.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, and Anthem is consistently scoring 2 to 3 tries a game for the most part. Mm-hmm. RFCLA can't really say the same, and that's actually why I ranked Anthem above LA, is just, even though performance-wise, they haven't brought home a W, I think they are playing better than LA is right now, as far as at least getting across that try line, trying to get some points on that board, than where, and being as young as they are and experienced as they are compared to what LA is bringing to the table.
I mean, I mean, Rob, if I said Will Leonard, Jason Emery, Andrew Coe, they have to be top 10,
you
would meter guys in the last 3 years.
Yeah, like you would think they could put some points on the board.
Yeah. Right. So it's a little off-putting that they're not scoring how they should be scoring. And don't get me wrong, when you're playing Houston, you're playing San Diego, you're playing Seattle, great stout defenses, but we've seen with San Diego and we've seen with Seattle and even with Houston, people can put tries up. You know, I'm not saying that you're going to, you know, put a lot. But for example, Houston Sabercats, 28 tries against. Seattle Seawolves, 25 tries against. San Diego, 23 tries against. So my point is they could put them up. Dallas Jackals have scored 43 tries. LA has only scored 25 tries. Come on.
Well, yeah, part of that's down to the fact that Dallas put an ass whooping on the Anthem. You know, it's put up a lot of tries, 60 plus points. But, you know, I guess I have two questions. All right. I know Scott put Seattle San Diego in a contender, mm-hmm. right? Christina, real quick, where did you have out of your top 12? Where did you have San Diego ranked?
I have them in eight. And I know that's a controversial spot.
Yeah, no,
that sounds like typical Sabercats. I bet you if you polled every Saber bro, they'd have the same thing.
I had them at five, and I just don't like that 33 point loss where they didn't score a point. That's okay.
If you told me to rank my top five, right? If you told me to rank my top five, it would be Houston, Seattle, New England, San Diego, then Chicago.
Yeah, but I guess my point is look at their losses and look at their wins. Losses, minus 33 to Houston, minus 6 to Seattle, minus 1 to Utah. Then wins, Dallas, they beat by 6. Other than Dallas, their wins are Miami, LA, NOLA, they beat by 13, who has been on a downward slide since game 4. The Sharks, Anthem, and LA. So really, out of their 6 wins, they've really had, you know, what, 3 of those wins? 4 of those wins are against, 2 of the wins out of those 6 are against teams that are neither one of them are more than 500.
They haven't had a game
that they won against a team that's been better than 500.
They seem to play down to their competition. And I think if they could break that cycle, they could be dangerous. Take out that 30-point win that 30-point loss is an anomaly, and you could do that for a couple teams. You know, a bunch of teams playing Anthem, you want to take the Dallas. If you take out the win by Dallas, I think, again, they still have a positive point differential.
We're doing it right now.
We're not doing it at the end of the season. We're not projecting. So my point is right now, that's where I have them.
Yeah,
you're just mad that I don't have the Hounds up there. And, you know, again, you watch some of the Hounds games,
and
Hounds game versus Utah, they should have won handily, and they just didn't have it in the tank to do so.
Well, yeah, and their average win is like 5 points. I mean, they're not sealing a win. And that's one of the things that really blew for me is that they're getting wins, but for the most part, just barely.
Because they're playing down to their competition. Yeah, so I wonder
weekend the Free Jacks. You know, I think that was a key. I mean, I spoke with a couple of their coaches and it was the same feeling. I mean, they reiterated my sentiment. They just got to learn how to win the tight ones, right? And I realize that we're talking about through halfway. I get that. But I think that win against the Free Jacks was a critical win. They avenged an earlier loss. They did it in Fort Quincy. And to me, it said a lot about the fact that they were able to mount, I think, 3 defensive stands inside that 5-meter of the red zone and keep the Free Jacks out of the scoring position and stop them from scoring a fourth try and a bonus point. Those, to me, were some signs of a team that really has made some adjustments in the upward trajectory.
I mean, again, it was a great win, and they are on a roll right now. But we've also seen them when they're not together, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Right now, I don't feel like they're together. You know, right now I feel like they're together, but I feel like going in with the second hardest schedule in the back end of the season, will it unravel again? Especially,
it's going to be tough.
It's going to be very hard. Now, I think, you know, you had a couple adjustments. You had Patty Ryan jump in there, and I forgot who else jumped in there in the forwards right before kickoff. But again, if the Hounds are like a conundrum, it's they seem very reminiscent to Rooney to me. Sometimes the heartbeat on the pitch doesn't feel like it's there, and it's almost like there's too many leaders, and nobody takes the reins. You know what I mean? Sometimes on that field, that's how it feels like to me watching. And that was reminiscent of Rooney last year, to be quite honest. There was a lot of leaders, and however the hierarchy was going down, it wasn't clear cut, and that was a detriment. So I think, you know, as far as Chicago, that's where I'm at. But if going back to San Diego, you know, they're going to be able to turn it on at the end of the season. Maybe again, I think if we're just going by their body of work recently, take out that one, you know, huge loss, and, you know, they're cooking.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that, but we'll agree.
They never fucking agree. So what's their?
they're still holding number 3 in the West. So, I mean, and like I said, I was definitely looking strictly 9 weeks back, and I think they can turn it around. I agree that the loss to Houston was shocking, and not only that, I mean, it wasn't just that they didn't score points, but we were down a man for 20 minutes and we had our most junior player out as our hooker. And so it just, like, the field was ripe for opportunity for them. And I don't know what was happening for them that night that kept them from being able to get on the scoreboard. But they certainly did at least respond with Dallas over the weekend and were able to pull out a win. So that's something. And maybe that will continue for them for the rest of the season. Maybe that'll get the be their bounce back they needed.
So let me ask you, I know, Scott, you didn't rank them in any particular order, but you had Houston and Seattle right there in that in that contenders. And Christina, you had Houston at the top. I think Seattle ranked second, right?
Good.
Yeah, go ahead. Did you have Seattle ranked second? Is that right? Or third?
I actually had them ranked fourth. And it's because, and as I was really focused on trajectory of how people were playing. And so the Hounds are on a great trajectory as far as like increasing level of points scored. And so I see them in a really upward motion. Seattle has been winning. I mean, obviously we're both tied for wins right now, but their wins have been a lot lower and a lot closer. And so I just see the Hounds kind of surpassing them into spot just by, the where they're pacing as far as their gameplay is right now.
Hmm. Scott, who'd you have one and two?
I mean, if you I would have Houston and Seattle.
Yeah.
Is
there any question that Houston is the team that the cream of the crop right now? I mean, they're essentially tat them out to what, what was it? Did San Diego only have one loss by the end of the season last season, right? Yeah. They're essentially kind of taking that top spot there.
Absolutely. I think what you're going to see the difference between Houston and Seattle is going to be bonus points. That's what it's going to come down to on who gets the bye week this year. It happened like 3 years in a row in the Eastern Conference from 2019, 2021, 2022, where it came down to bonus points and to who got the bye. And three of those years, I believe NOLA got knocked out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be that way more so in the Western Conference than the Eastern Conference. That's why I think some of those losses that the Jackals had that were crucial, where they got some points, some bonus points, might be the difference if they can get some wins in the second half of the season. Maybe they have the opportunity to jump San Diego if San Diego does take a big slide, which you guys think is going to happen.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily look at Seattle's the rest of their fixtures. I do know that as I look ahead, there are some key fixtures based upon what we've seen performance wise in the first half of the season, some fixtures that I'm looking forward to seeing that maybe are critical matches that perhaps will mete out this, ranking a little bit more. And I look none other than this weekend to come, NOLA versus Seattle in week 11 and Chicago and OGDC. Can Chicago, they have another one against a team they beat just by 4 points. What kind of progress will we see out of them in this new team with 60% turnover from, week one, or was it week two all the way now to week 11. I look at week 12 with Houston and Chicago, NOLA and Utah, San Diego and New England. I mean, week 12 looks like it's going to be a cracker, Dallas and Seattle. And then, I look ahead to NOLA versus Houston and Utah versus San Diego. I think those will be some interesting matchups that could really have an impact upon, the playoff structure, not necessarily who's in and who's out, more so where if teams get a home playoff match that first round or not.
Well, here's the thing with Seattle, their next matches against Houston and San Diego are going to be both away. So they're going to be at Houston and at San Diego the third to last week and the last week of the season before we get into playoffs. Everything else, NOLA Gold this week, Dallas Jackals the week after, OGs after that, Utah after that, then that Houston match in Houston, then home against LA, and then away in San Diego. I mean, if they can go and knock off San Diego or Houston in one of those, and what I'm thinking is if Seattle runs the table at this point, they get by Houston on that June 15th, week 16 match, they beat a team in LA that can't score. They can lose the game to San Diego and probably still be on their way to take that number one spot because they knock Houston around depending on the bonus point situation. And that's what I would look to do, because that last week you can throw in some guys who maybe, you know, haven't been getting all the minutes, rest some of your guys, not worry about trying to beat a San Diego Legion team who might be on the downslope. But Christina, just give us the last couple of thoughts you have, because we're going to move on to our next segment.
Sure thing. So I think in general, 2024 season has been really exciting. There's been a ton of games that have come down to the last minutes, which has given me a ton of anxiety. And I am really excited for what the next 9 weeks are going to look like. I think there's going to be shifts in your top eight spots. I think some of the guys in the lower ranks are going to be fighting it out amongst each other. But I think there's going to definitely be some opportunity in the next 9 weeks for some teams to really shake things up and, again, just keep it to be an interesting season.
Absolutely. I think you're right. I think we're going to see if our predictions kind of come out. And this is a great rant. I really enjoyed it. We're going to move on real quick to our Super Brew winner of the week. But before we get to that, let's have a word from our sponsors. And Rob, muting yourself. Way to go.
Yeah, congratulations.
Muting yourself again.
In week 10, to Brad Brooks, a Chicago Hounds fan, he won himself a $25 coupon to Shop MOR, where he can buy some fabulous Hounds kit. They have some great jerseys, some Kappa gear on sale there. And the greatest thing about Shop MOR is the turnaround time. If you order by noon, it'll be shipped out that day, and you'll have your gear within 2 to 3 days' time. So they ship fast, and they do a great job on the customer service end. So thank you very much to Shop MLR, partnering with the Rugby Rant Podcast Show, for sponsoring the Super Brew Contest all year, weekly winners. And we have three big winners there at the end. I know Preston Hammerschmidt is right there in third, and he's chomping at the bit to get there at tops of the table.
Oh, he ain't making it. Don't worry. But now that we talked about Subaru, let's give our locks of the week.
The Rugby Rants lock of the week.
Hi, Christina, it's yours. What's your lock of the week?
I'm going to say it's going to be Dallas versus RFCLA, and I'm going to say Dallas is going to take the win by at least 6.
Wow. Okay. So we got Dallas -6. Hammer time. Your turn.
Well, it'd be too easy to go with the obvious one of Houston over at Anthem by, you know, probably 17 plus points. I'm actually going to go with Chicago over DC, Old Glory DC. Not that that's unusual. Chicago won the earlier one, but I think Chicago's going to, they're on a roll, 4 wins in a row. They had a big victory, emotional victory over San Diego over the Free Jacks last weekend. I think I'm going to go with Chicago over DC by 10.
Good. Love it. So my lock of the week, I'm going, Utah Warriors are going down to Miami and kicking the Sharks. But I think Utah is going to have some high flyers there with their back line. I don't think Miami's going to have the horsepower to deal with them in their back line. Even though I believe Miami might have a little bit of advantage with the weather, it's probably going to be nice and warm down there, unusual for what Utah's used to. I still think Utah is the more cohesive unit. I'm going to say Utah -10 in Miami.
Yeah, Scott, I want to bring that point up. I think this is the critical juncture for a lot of teams during the season, especially teams in the Deep South that are still holding matches at home. Houston comes to mind, Dallas comes to mind, NOLA comes to mind, Miami comes to mind. And you got to remember, there are still teams from the northern latitudes that are not quite used to training in that heat. And I saw it this week in the Midwest. I mean, it was 80, 85 degrees here. And I think teams came from those colder climes and really didn't quite get themselves hydrated. So a lot of cramping, a lot of guys, with a bit of heat stroke, early onset of heat stroke coming in. So teams are going to have to be mindful of this piece as they go into these matches here in week 10, 11, 12.
And little tidbit, Utah's at Miami this week, and then they are at NOLA next week. So again, it'll be a heat thing. So before we end our show, Christina, do you want to give anybody a shout out or anything like that? Sabre Bros, whatever.
Actually, I'd love to give a shout out to one of our merch partners. It's a Creative Measure. It's a small family owned business that creates all our wonderful t-shirts for our different matches and such. And so I love supporting small woman owned business, and they do great things for our team and giving us lots of really fun options that we can wear out in the community.
Nice. That's awesome. Appreciate the shout out still a growing league. You're going to have these small vendors, and this is how we grow the league, by supporting the people who support us. So really appreciate it. And they look like they have some great merch. But shoot, we've had a great time. I think we're done and dusted on this one. I'm Scott, the big guy Farrar. That's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. For Christina, hopefully you'll be on a couple more times this year. It was great to have you. This is episode 173 of the Rugby Rant. I'm the big guy. See you guys later.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.